Welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda here on WGXC Acra. Tonight, it's a little bit of a different broadcast. I'm Jenny. I'm coming to you from the near past. It's Monday night, and I am going to tell you about what's playing in the movies right now, and then you're going to listen to a rebroadcast of an episode from a couple years ago that I think Amanda and I both are really proud of. Sadly, Amanda, my lovely co-host, is out with the flu, and so tonight, you know, you're going to listen to our past voices and connect with us there. But before you listen to that old episode, let me tell you about what's playing in the theaters today. Starting with the Wyndham Theater in Wyndham, New York, we have Dogman, Mufasa the Lion King, and A Complete Unknown. And if you're interested in any of those movies or their showtimes, you can find out more information at WyndhamTheater.com. Heading across the river over to Hudson at the Spotlight Theater, otherwise known as the Fairview Movieplex, we have, this week, Captain America Brave New World, Heart Eyes, Love Hurts, Companion, Dogman, Paddington in Peru, The Brutalist, A Complete Unknown, Mufasa the Lion King, Moana 2 is still there, Flight Risk, and then a mess of Harry Potter movies. And if you're interested in any of those movies or their specific showtimes, you can find out more information at spotlighttheater.com, and just make sure to choose Spotlight of Hudson from the drop-down menu. Also in Hudson at TSL, otherwise known as Time and Space Limited, this week we have Rose, the Oscar shorts in both live action and animation, How to Draw a Bunny, A Coffee in Berlin, Gods of Mexico, Art Spiegelman, Disaster is My Muse, and The Brutalist is coming. And if you're interested in any of those movies, or you know what, they're also playing the Met Opera and also the National Theatre of London. So if you're interested in any of those showtimes or any more information about what's happening at TSL, you can find out more information at timeandspace.org. And last for Hudson, at Story Screen Cinema, which is the three-screen movie theater on Fairview, we have The Brutalist and Companion. And then they're doing some classic film screenings. So they're doing a David Lynch series, so you can go see Mulholland Drive this month. Or, if you're interested in something a little lighter, you can go see Forgetting Sarah Marshall and Blazing Saddles. Coming soon at Story Screen also, they have Captain America, Brave New World, Paddington in Peru, The Monkey, and the Oscar-nominated short films in live action, animation, and documentary. And if you're interested in any of those movies or their showtimes, you can find out more information at StoryScreenPresents.com. Last but not least, let me tell you about what's playing at Upstate Films, starting with the Star Cinema, which is the location in Rhinebeck. We have The Brutalist, I'm Still Here, Porcelain War and Once Upon a Time in Ukraine, Vermilio, the 2025 Oscar-nominated shorts in animation, live action, and documentary, and No Other Land. And heading across the river to the Orpheum Theater, which is the location in Saugerties, we have Luther, Never Too Much, Carrie, Don't Look Now, Becoming Led Zeppelin, the 2025 Oscar-nominated shorts in animation, live action, and documentary, The Brutalist, Before Sunrise, Flow, The Room Next Door, and Community Spaces, Balanced Growth Moving Forward. And if you're interested in any of those movies or their showtimes, you can find out more information at upstatefilms.org. All right, and now I'm going to hand it over to past Jenny and Amanda to tell you about some movies that we watched about 2 years ago. This is a fun episode. It's about screwball comedies, and I think it's nice to listen to something maybe a little bit lighter at this moment. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks. Bye.
All right.
Here we are. We're back again, baby.
And Jenny and I have talked about ways to experiment with our show. Because why the heck not? And one of the ways is we talked about, usually we watch movies entirely separately around the theme that we choose, and then the only time we find out what the other watched is on the air. But this time we decided maybe we'll watch one movie that we both watch, and then the rest like usual. So we did that this time.
Yeah. Do you want to start with our shared movie? Is that what you're trying to say? Is that what you're trying to say to me?
Dude, this is my first time. My first time doing it our new way. But I just wanted to explain to all our millions and millions of fans that it's a little different this time and not to be scared.
Don't be. It's hard. Change is really scary. We all struggle with it.
Yeah.
But it's okay.
Yeah.
Also, hey, let me just take this opportunity to say we have an Instagram where we post about the stuff that we're thinking about and our upcoming shows. And if you have any thoughts and feelings about, you know, if you like us, if you don't like us,
ways
we could change. Or if you're like, please don't change.
Yeah.
You could just DM us there and tell us that you like us. That's good too. Or you can also be like, you guys are dumb and I don't like the movies that you like. And then we'll send you back a mean emoji.
I'll try to have a thick skin if you have that to say. When you can suggest themes or movies once we announce our theme. And that's Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda. Should we start with the movie we watched together?
So why not?
Well, okay. So first of all, I guess I just want to talk a little bit about what screwball comedies are.
Yeah, absolutely.
It seems like most people did know what they were. And when we first chose this theme, I was like, oh, like Airplane and Hot Shots, like all those like wacky, absurd comedies. Well, that is not what screwball comedies are. Screwball comedies are, in their heyday, is like the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. And they're like role reversal romance stories, basically, where it's like a headstrong, smart, quirky lady and like kind of a fuddy-duddy dude. Yeah.
It's like, it's very much an early version of the romantic comedy, mm-hmm. With usually like really zany plots that kind of don't matter. So that's something that I was thinking about a lot as I was watching movies for the show. I was like, how am I going to summarize any of these? Because the plot simply is irrelevant and they're usually really complicated and like have a lot of farcical elements to them.
Exactly.
And they're kind of just an avenue for two people to trade like barbs while falling in love with each other.
Yeah.
With like the significant piece of it that is like an eschewing of gender roles in a way that's really interesting. I had a good time.
I had a great time too. Yeah. And I've said before on this show that I usually don't watch movies from before the 60s.
Yeah.
So this was cool. I really enjoyed these movies that I watched, and like the sense of humor is pretty timeless.
Yeah, for sure.
And pretty inoffensive too.
Yeah,
at least
totally.
In the movies that I watch, because it is just about these, characters that are not the stereotypes of usually a man and a woman falling in love in older movies. So I had a great time.
I did too. I think also the other thing is that like a lot of the comedy relies on like both physical like slapstick comedy and in relevance to the movie that we're going to talk about that we both watched, like Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Like very like comedy, silly, like zany really feels like the word that I want to use to describe it. and so the movie that we both decided to watch is What's Up, Doc? From 1970. I didn't write it down.
I did write it down. It's 1972.
Nice.
and let me... Okay, so it stars the lovely, lovely Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neal. And Ryan O'Neal and his wife, who's...
Madeline Kahn,
who is really tight, you know.
Yes.
They go to San Francisco for, he's like a music researcher, and they're trying to get a grant from this guy. And in the gift shop of the hotel that they're staying in, Howard Bannister is the main character's name, meets the quirky and beautiful and alluring Barbara Streisand, whose character's name is Judy Maxwell, that Wikipedia describes as charming trouble magnet Judy Maxwell, who immediately, it just seems that she decides that she's just gonna pester this guy and just pretend they're dating.
She's like, I'm just gonna be a problem for him.
Yeah, I'm just gonna be a problem for him. It seems to be a trend in these movies that they're charming, funky girls who don't pay attention to traffic.
Yeah.
In my notes.
Yeah, actually, you're really right. Yeah, that like, is the traffic thing is a problem.
Yeah, like gorgeous gals who like, you know, maybe get their money through duping people, walking right into traffic,
yeah,
and everyone stopping because they don't want to hit a beautiful lady.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, trying to describe the plot. So the part of the zaniness of this plot comes from multiple characters who have the same exact luggage in, and we see this all happen in the airport. One bag is filled with these rocks that our main character Howard has as part of his music project.
They're his music rocks. They're his music igneous rocks.
Yeah, exactly. Another top secret government worker has the same bag full of top secret government papers. A wealthy socialite has a bag full of jewels, and Judy's bag is just full of clothes. So that is the zany undercurrent, which brings us to the pinnacle of the movie, which, you know, everyone's staying in the same hotel, chasing each other down to try to get, you know,
their bags back.
Exactly.
And it's just, yeah, it's like, it's wildly complicated, and there's no way to like keep track of which bag is where. And that's part of it, is you're just like, you're along for this very silly Looney Tunes ride.
Yeah.
And I just love, there's, because Barbara Streisand is like this, her whole thing is that she, her dad really wants her to get a college education, so she goes to like lots and lots of schools but drops out after a year because she's like kind of spacey and also keeps sleeping with people and getting kicked out.
Yeah.
And so she has a lot of information about a lot of really specific things.
Yeah.
But she's also like clearly very like wily and conniving. Like, she is very much the Bugs Bunny of yeah. the movie.
Yeah.
And so she gate crashes the music conference that Ryan O'Neill is trying to get a grant at, mm-hmm. By pretending to be his wife. Mm-hmm. And then that creates this like part of their romantic tension,
yeah.
is that they're both really attracted to each other, and she's just kind of trying to like seduce him away from his drip of a wife.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, it helps or doesn't help depending on whose perspective, that she's extremely charming, like
totally
posing as his wife charms the guy he's trying to get the grant from and everybody else. So, you know, that's starts to bend him toward her.
Yeah, totally. And so they get caught up in this other like complicated plot, I think related to the guy who has the top secret papers, I guess. Like, it's yeah. it's so complex. It doesn't matter.
It's a lot of fun. It's yeah. There's a zany car chase through San Francisco.
It's so fun. It's so, yeah, the entire thing is set in San Francisco, which is like just such a great like cartoonish setting.
Yes.
It's just really lovely.
Those silly streets.
And so the culmination of the movie after all of this like crazy like, who are you, what am I doing, where is my bag, what are you doing, like just people like having silly scene after silly scene, is this insane car chase around the hills of San Francisco, where they do the like actual Looney Tunes stuff of two guys moving a glass window across the street while another guy's up on a really tall ladder, and the cars keep zooming past, and they like move the glass in time, and they move the glass in time, and then they don't move the glass in time. And it's just so good.
Yeah.
It's so like all of those classic jokes really hit in real life too, with like this exceptional scene on like the crazy hills.
Yeah.
It's just great.
It's a joy to watch. And Barbara Streisand is just so lovely. It's just beautiful to see her on that screen. She is absolutely so annoying and so charming.
I know, it's such a weird, like, I was thinking about why in modern movies I hate like quippiness. I find it so annoying. Mm-hmm. But in these like older rom-coms, I'm finding it a lot more charming. And I think a lot of it has to do with like, it feels quippy in a like a wordplay kind of way almost. Like everybody's making jokes also at each other's expenses. Like, everybody's roasting each other all the time, which I think is really funny.
It's so fun.
And just doesn't have that. It feels much less empty than like modern, like one quippy guy says like the dumb thing.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's so annoying.
It's true. And so I actually have, it's funny that you bring that up, because I have written in my notes, that is the late period or any period screwball comedy, the origin of the manic pixie dream girl.
Oh, maybe.
Because solely because of the relationship, the romantic relationship in these movies, where, it's kind of a dumb, dopey guy. Or not dumb, like the older ones, the guys are usually kind of an idiot.
Yeah, real himbo.
Yeah. So, and then this later one, What's Up Doc, being a later example of a screwball comedy, it maybe changes that classic role reversal into less of like the dopey guy and the smart, quippy girl into a rigid guy who's like a stranger to joy,
right.
And a girl like
who's like fun,
spontaneous,
yeah,
and like mixing it up, and he has no choice because she's just gonna steamroll right into his life,
right.
And he's gonna learn how to have fun.
Yeah, totally.
So it feels like the later popular character.
Yeah, it's like
the manic pixie dream girl who has had a similar role in those movies.
Yeah, totally. That's like the modern twisting of it in a like way that's like, oh man,
yeah.
Look at what we had.
Yeah, exactly. Which, like you're saying, is the quote manic pixie dream girl is a lot harder to handle.
Yeah,
now
for
it's
sure.
Really annoying.
Yeah, I was thinking about this a lot because the other two movies I watched are both from the 30s, and it's like thinking about the gender roles in these movies is really interesting because the screwball comedy is like in part characterized by having like women who are very much like have their own agency and are very much like in charge of what's going on around them, and mm-hmm. that's like kind of like radical, you know,
yeah.
Like, you know, in a way that's really interesting. And the types of like romantic comedies that we have now that are like quoting screwball comedies are much more focused on like traditional gender roles in a way that's like, it's kind of crazy to like watch a movie from the 30s where it's like, oh my god, like this is so much more progressive,
yeah,
than what we have now,
right?
Just like,
isn't
so
it funny?
It's so
how that
funny
seems to happen. All
isn't
the time?
It wild how we live in like a very puritanical culture?
Yeah, it's so weird how the arm just continuously swings back,
just swings back and forth. It's just wild.
Yeah, it's totally true. And I don't know if it's because, you know, we get used to one thing, like one change, mm-hmm. and then an audience craves a return to,
right, like the
whatever.
Backlash.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know.
But yeah, it's just fascinating. But I really liked it's What's Up Doc, from what I understand, and I did a very like as longtime listeners of the show know, we're not experts, we're just a couple of dummies who have access to Wikipedia just like everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. We're both busier than we'd like to be, which isn't a really good excuse, but in this new fresh year of 2023, maybe I will get better at doing more deep research. And of course, like, it all depends on how interested we are in a movie.
That's true.
Like, there isn't and again, I can't fully confidently say this, but there's not too much to plumb in,
right,
a movie like this.
It's true. There's not like a lot to talk about other than like, wasn't that fun?
Yeah. Yeah. Just now when I was looking it up, I was looking at Peter Bogdanovich because I haven't seen a lot of his movies. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never seen Paper Moon.
Yeah, totally.
But he plays
or do you
Tony...
mean Ryan O'Neill?
No, Peter Bogdanovich, the director
of Paper
What's
Moon.
Up, Doc.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. But
yeah.
Yeah.
He was played Tony Soprano's therapist in...
What?
Yeah.
I could never in a million years have guessed what the end of that sentence was. I'm sorry, that's why I got confused.
I think it's another reason why The Sopranos is so great, because it has a lot of... brings in a lot of actors from the entertainment industry, like,
yeah,
older Frankie Valli is in it.
Oh, whoa. Yeah.
And Dr. Melfi, who's Tony Soprano's therapist, is... what's her face? Who's his wife in Goodfellas? Anyways.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sopranos tangent.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But What's Up, Doc? Was a whole lot of fun. It was...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say what I wish I had done, mm-hmm. before we did this, which I did not find out until today, there's this great podcast that we both like called You Must Remember This, mm-hmm. and they... Karina Longworth, who does that podcast, did a season on Polly Platt, who was married to Peter Bogdanovich, mm. And was the art director for many films, including What's Up, Doc? And so if you have some thoughts about, or if you want to know more about like that era of filmmaking and Peter Bogdanovich and like 70s Hollywood, I would recommend getting into You Must Remember This, because we're just here to chit-chat and laugh.
And, you know, that would be fascinating, too, because that movie looks really good.
It does.
And thinking about a prop like that bag.
Yeah, totally.
After I watched it, I went straight onto eBay to try to find a bag that looked just like...
The, like, tartan.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a tartan weekender bag.
It's so cute.
It's so cute. Much like just... You know, there's so many movies that have just one great prop that gets a lot of attention. And then I'm like, well,
I would like that prop. Yeah, I did. The movie looks great. I will say Barbara Streisand's funny big hat. I really I just have to draw attention to her funny big hat.
Yeah, she has a funny big hat, like the classic, like, what do you call it? Like a train conductor.
Like a conductor hat.
Which I 1000% I've shown you the picture.
Oh yeah, I've seen the picture of you in that big funny hat.
10 years old, 11 years old. I loved that big funny hat.
There was
so
an era
much.
Of time where we really liked those hats again. I didn't have one, but I really wanted one.
I know. I love all the dunks on the internet about that being like a lesbian hat.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is.
Especially like
if you had this
version.
Hat. Oh my god. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you had this hat, you something I want you to think about for a little bit.
Yeah, that was a really fun one. I'm glad that, so when we first picked this theme, I was, because of, like I mentioned earlier, I usually watch later period movies, and I was trying to, I found this big long list of screwball comedies and was going to try to watch ones that were later, but I felt like I had to get a better idea of what the true ones were. Mm-hmm. So yeah, then mostly watched ones from the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, so fun.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, if you want to watch it, it's streaming available for rent. So I rented it on YouTube for like $2. I think it's mostly $2.99 pretty much everywhere. What's Up Doc, that is. So yeah, that was, I really enjoyed it. I had a great time.
Yeah.
Watching a silly flick.
Should I tell you about another movie?
I want to know.
Okay, the first movie that I watched was a movie from 1941 called The Lady Eve.
Ooh.
Which was so fun. So, The Lady Eve stars Henry Fonda and Barbara Stanwyck.
Yes.
And so, I think it's worth mentioning tonight that we picked this theme out long before Christmas.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And then it was Christmas, so we weren't on the air. And then I was sick, so we weren't on the air. So a lot of these we watched a while ago. They are not fresh like they usually are. So apologies for any spaciness that's more than usual. So this movie begins on a steamboat where the handsome idiot Charles Pike, who's the heir to a beer fortune, Pike Ale, is on the steamboat with the gorgeous con artist and her con artist dad, Gene Harrington. And they pick him as a mark. There's like an opening scene in the dining hall, and she is, she's so gorgeous and charming. She's a very, the ultimate screwball comedy woman, like smart as a whip, out to steal some money from some dopey dudes.
I love Barbara Stanwyck.
She's so hot.
I love her so much.
They're the opening scene where they're, you know, basically like sizing up this Charles Pike, is they're in the dining room of the steamboat, and she's watching him in a makeup mirror, and she's watching all of these other women trying to get his attention. So Charles Pike is a snake expert. He's just come from the Amazon studying snakes, which is part of the whole Lady Eve theme, of course. And she's watching him in this makeup mirror and watching all of these women like drop something in front of his table and lustily pick it up.
Yes.
And he's just not paying attention to a single one of them. And so as like he's leaving the dining hall or something, she like trips him.
She
really goes for it, and like it breaks her shoe, and she's like, well, you're gonna have to come to my room and like help me pick out a new pair of shoes, basically. And so this poor sucker, he just has absolutely no chance. And so she's duping him, right? And he even before they're off the steamboat, is like, I'm having a great time with your daughter, Colonel Harrington. I'd like to ask for her hand. And as it goes in a lot of plots, screwball comedy-wise or otherwise, she does actually end up falling in love with him. Mm-hmm. But it's too late because he finds out from... He's got this kind of, like, guy that... like a bodyguard, basically, yeah. who finds out that she and her father are con artists. And so he finds out and rejects her. And then... she is really pissed that it didn't work out and that he turned her down, and she re-enters his life posing as, like, he lives in some wealthy neighborhood. He's back at home with his rich family, and she poses as this British niece of a friend of the family, and this guy falls in love with her again as another woman.
Incredible.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember again exactly how it goes. Yeah, so she poses as the Lady Eve Sidwich. And he is, of course, like, wow, you really look like someone I knew. But because he's a handsome, true idiot, he falls madly in love.
Yes.
And his bodyguard's like, listen, man, are you kidding me? It's the same. It's the same girl.
That's still her.
And he's like, no. There's just so many things that are different about her. I wish I could remember all the details, because that is a really an amazing running joke through all of it. And also just making a lot of these older ones do a lot of jobs at the upper class.
Yeah, totally.
Because it's like post-depression
era. Yeah.
And they're like, rich people are rude and they're idiots.
Yeah. They're just absolute rubes.
And so in order to further torture him, so he is like, marry me. And she's like, yes, of course. And then on their honeymoon, they're on a train. And she's like, well, I guess I should probably tell you about this former lover. And he's like, oh, what? Okay, I guess that's fine. And then she just keeps going. She's like, oh, my God.
And also this guy, too.
And so it's this long scene where she keeps bringing them up. And then he eventually gets off the train. It's all hung at the end of the movie where she could get this huge divorce settlement, because Charles wants a divorce. And then, oh, God, I can't even remember how... So Charles doesn't want to speak to the Lady Eve, and our Jean / the Lady Eve is starting to kind of feel bad because she has her whole con worked out. She tortured this guy, but now she doesn't have him at all. And so she returns to his house just as Jean, and he's like, oh my God, I've missed you.
Oh my God, incredible. Yeah. So good. You're nothing like that other woman.
Yeah, you have no idea what happened to me. So she gets her handsome idiot back.
Amazing.
It's great. It was such a fun movie. It was so tight, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Obviously, just like not only in the dialogue and the pace of it all, but just what a clean and perfect story.
Yeah.
Oh, it was God, so fun.
So good. It's just like, it's so fun to watch these tropes that also like feel like we've seen them redone a million times now, but never as good as they were done then, and in such a like funny and just like exciting way. Like, it's so nice. I also have a just like an unconscious bias of like, oh, it's a movie that's in black and white and it's really old, it's gonna be boring.
Yeah,
but then you put it on and you're like, I'm captivated. I'm having a great time.
Yeah,
like it's so nice to watch these like little madcap comedies that have like genuine emotion to them too, in a way where you're like, I want them to get together. It's fun,
and they're not long, or at least not these ones.
No,
the little comedies are, they're like an hour and a half. Yeah, they're so easy.
It's great.
There was a whole collection of screwball comedies on Criterion Collection.
Oh, nice.
So, by the way, that is one of the places where The Lady Eve is streaming, and I'll pull up other places that it is. But so some of the only quote-unquote research I did is also in that collection was a little interview with Patton Oswalt about screwball comedies.
Patton, what do you think about this?
I know. All right, so Lady Eve is also on Amazon for purchase. But Patton Oswalt was, like, talking about how, like I said earlier, these OG screwball comedies are really, really making fun of the upper class.
Yeah,
because
totally.
Because of them coming fresh off the Depression. Yeah. Like, most of them are from the 30s.
Yeah, and, totally.
Yeah, and having... yeah, jabbing at the wealthy and, like, these workaholic slash just checked out wealthy people.
Right, because there's so much of it also. I was thinking about this, at least one of the ones that I watched, which I will transition gently into talking about now.
Yeah.
I watched His Girl Friday, which I thought I'd seen, but it turns out I had not
seen it.
It's so good.
But
that one is also about a woman in the workplace, and it's like, because it's from, or that's actually from 1940, but like a lot of these rom-coms are from like the mid to late 30s and the 40s, and it's like when, like, presumably women like wanted to work and have jobs, but it was before World War II, so they didn't have to yet, and people, so it's like this kind of tension also of like trying to get into the workforce but also being pushed out of the workforce, and like all of these things interacting in the same place, which is kind of like what created this bubble of like class comedy and gender comedy and like all these different like role reversals in a way that is just so interesting.
It's so interesting. Yeah. It's so fun. I wish I could remember more of what Patton said.
Patton, tell us what you think.
Which, in my notes, my phone auto-corrected his name to Patron, so
Patron
Oswalt.
So sorry, Patron.
Yeah, I highly recommend The Lady Eve.
Yes, I gotta watch it.
So fun. And yeah, I forgot that the very last scene is actually back on a steamboat.
Oh, nice.
She finds out that he's taking another trip on the steamboat.
She's like, here we go.
Arranges to be on it.
Yes.
I know. She is,
I feel like that's
so in control.
That's also a trend of, like, the last scene being the first scene. Like, it's like, nobody changes in these movies. They all end up in the same place that they started. Like, the same as What's Up, Doc. Like, it's like, they end up, they're on the plane together going home. But it's like, it's just... Yeah, nobody has undergone anything. They've just had, like, a funny madcap adventure, and, like, maybe they have a boyfriend at the end.
Exactly. And I found, so, this movie, and then another older one that I watched was, which was from 38, have the women pretty much in control the entire time. And then there's usually one turning point moment where they feel that they're no longer in control of this man's feelings.
Right.
Like, they've been toying the whole time, and then when they're no longer in control is that like tiny moment of character development.
Yeah, totally.
Where they're like, oh wait,
what have I done?
Oh,
maybe I shouldn't have done that. I guess
I do love you.
I guess I love you. Oh my god, so fun.
Tell me about another one you watched.
So His Girl Friday is from 1940. It's directed by Howard Hawks, which I don't think I've seen any of his other movies. I know he's another big name.
Yeah, I don't
like
even know.
Like a big 40s name that I'm just like, one of these days I'll watch some of those movies.
One of these days.
But it stars Cary Grant and Rosalind Russell. Mm. And it is, I believe, it's the fastest talking movie ever made. The movie with the fastest talking. I took a screenshot. The average word per minute count of the film is 240, while the average American speech is around 140 words per minute.
Oh my god!
Which I noticed immediately because I had to turn on the captions, because I was like, they're talking so fast. I don't know what they're saying.
Whoa.
It's too fast. But it's so... You get into the rhythm of it after the first, like, 15 minutes, but it really throws you in fast, and you're like, oh god, oh god.
Yeah.
But that's, like, my understanding of screwball comedy is, before I did any research, was like, it's like rom-coms, but there's like fast-talking dames in them.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Just fast-talking dames.
There's like fast-talking dames. Yeah. I don't know.
And like so many rapid jokes that you
yes.
all... They're so funny. The jokes are so good. Like
yeah.
the wordplay is
so good.
And it's so fast that you're almost like...
Wait, stop.
Oh,
come back. Yeah, totally. Like it's like trying to hold on to a rope that's like flying out of your hands.
Yeah.
But so, His Girl Friday, I'm just going to give you, like, a little bit of a plot summary, because, like all of these, it's, like, overly complicated. But so, Rosalind Russell plays a woman named Hildy Johnson, who is a journalist, and she's the star journalist at this paper that's edited by Cary Grant, her boss, and also her ex-husband. Mm-hmm. And so, they used to be married. She's always worked for him. She's the best reporter at the paper. However, she's met a really boring insurance agent who's dumb as a stump. She's like, I'm in love. I'm quitting the business. I'm out of here. I don't want to be a journalist anymore. I want to be a housewife in Albany. And Cary Grant's like, no, you don't. And she's like, yes, I do. I'm out of here. And she like packs up all her stuff and she like makes a last round around the newsroom being like, bye, everybody. Like, I'll never see you again. I'm going to be so happy. I'm done with the news business. It's terrible. And then a man who was meant to be a man who has killed a policeman accidentally is going to be hanged the next day. And so she's like, okay, fine. One last story. I'm going to go.
One last job, eh? I know that one.
Exactly. She's like, all right, I'm going to go interview that guy and run it in the paper because it might save his life. But that's the only reason why I'm doing it. And also, Cary Grant, you need to take out some insurance with my husband because he gets a commission from it. And that way, that's the only way I'm going to do this is if, because she's like, you got to bribe me or I'm not doing it. But little does she know that the guy who's going to be killed the next day escapes from his cell because there's like this super complicated plot that doesn't matter where the mayor of the city and the sheriff are in cahoots to put this to basically like execute this guy in order to get votes to win the election. And the sheriff is an absolute clown idiot and gives the guy who is going to be killed, who's convicted or who is accused of killing a cop, his gun to like reenact the scene and he gets shot and then the guy escapes. And so Hildy, who's Rosalind Russell's character, is in the newsroom as all of this is happening. The escape is going on and everybody suddenly like everybody in the press room like starts picking up phones and calling everybody and trying to figure out what's going on, and all their conversations are overlapping and everybody's like writing up articles really, really fast and like shouting into the phone to be like, new line, tear up that page, I got a new story for you. Because they're all from competing newspapers, but they all work in the same press room.
Great.
And so she's like pulled right back in. She can't help herself. And everybody else leaves the newsroom and she's still in there packing up, trying to get ready. She's like, okay, I'm just following the story, but like, I'm really going to leave, I swear. And the guy who's I believe his name is Earl something, Earl Williams maybe. He walks in the window. He climbs in the window, the escaped convict.
Uh-huh.
And he is very confused. He doesn't know what's going on because it becomes very clear that like he did kill the policeman, but he didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah.
And so Hildy does actually want to help him, but she's like, wait, I got this guy that everybody's looking for. He just walked into the room. And so she like hides him in a desk so that nobody else can find him. And while all of this is going on, her idiot husband or her fiance. So sorry.
Not yet married.
Not yet married.
Still time to stop that marriage.
He is his name is Bruce Baldwin. And they've been trying to get on the train to Albany all day. Like when she first decides like, okay, one last story before I go, he's like, oh yeah, that's fine. Like we'll just take the 9 o'clock train instead of the 7 o'clock train. And she's like, great. And then he comes up to the newsroom and he's like, oh, are you ready to go? And she's like, I'm sorry, I'm not ready yet. And he's like, okay, like whatever. And she like sends him away, but then Cary Grant like plants something on him so that he gets arrested. Like it's just like this constant. This guy Bruce Baldwin gets arrested like four times through this movie because Cary Grant
just—it's really
such a good joke. Like first he gets all of his stuff stolen, and then he ends up in jail anyway.
Oh,
and
Bruce.
Then Cary Grant has like his henchmen like plant something on him, so he gets kidnapped again or arrested again. It just like keeps happening, and Hildy stops bailing him out because she's distracted by her job. She gets she's so invested in this like incredible news story that she's gonna write. That's like Cary Grant comes in and is like, this is gonna change everything, there's gonna be streets named after you. And she's like, Johnson Street. She's like psyched. And so it's just super complicated but not important. And so she and Cary Grant slowly fall back in love because they're like doing the story together and they get so excited and like caught up in it. And she obviously decides that she's not going to move to Albany and become a housewife because she's obsessed with her job. She's so good at being a journalist.
Yes.
And it becomes resolved because they're hiding Earl in the desk and everybody comes back into the room. And Bruce Baldwin's mom also ends up in the in there somehow, because she was going to be traveling on the train with them, and she like saw Earl climb into the desk, like she knows that he's in there, so she reveals him. But then it turns out that the sheriff and the mayor received a stay of execution from the governor of New York, but like tried to bribe the guy who brought the stay of execution, but then he's also dumb, so he also walks in and tells everybody. So everyone almost gets arrested, and then they all get released again, and it's the execution is put off. It's not going to happen.
Happy ending.
Happy ending. And Hildy is like, okay, I am going to be a journalist with you. And it just ends with them walking away together and her carrying her own stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he will not carry her suitcase for her.
Yes.
And it's just, like, so... It's just so fun.
Oh,
it's
man.
It's just, like... It's just a crazy madcap, like...
Yeah.
There's so many incredible lines in it that I just, like... There's... I don't even know where to begin to tell you all of the comedic things in it. The only one that I wrote down, because just the delivery of it was incredible, and my delivery is not going to be that good.
I'm so ready.
But Cary Grant's henchman, who's this guy named Louis, who he's like hiring to frame Bruce to like get him arrested over and over again. Cary Grant has him carry off the mother-in-law. Because she's like interfering, and so he like literally kidnaps her and drives her away. But while he's driving her away, he accidentally crashes into a bunch of cops, and so then they both get arrested. And he comes back to tell Cary Grant about it, and he says, "Can you imagine bumping into a load of cops? They come rolling out like oranges." And something about his delivery of it is like the funniest thing I've ever heard. He says, "They come rolling out like oranges." What? I don't know why.
These movies are so weird.
They're so weird. It's just, oh, the other thing that's really insane is that there's this other subplot with like a woman who like is maybe in love with the convicted criminal, but it's really unclear. And like she, to distract from a situation, just randomly jumps out the window. She just like jumps right out the window.
Amazing.
And everyone's like, oh my God, what just happened? Like, it's just, and she's fine, but it's just like absolute chaos in this newsroom.
Oh my God.
But I loved it. It was great.
So good. I feel like that like is the, when one is familiar with screwball comedies, that's like the expected format, or like
right.
these, but because I'm new to it, I'm like, this is crazy.
Nuts.
This is crazy.
What are they doing? What? Yeah. But yeah, I had such a great time. It is streaming somewhere. Let me look it up. Oh, it's streaming for free a couple of places, including Pluto, Tubi, and Amazon Prime.
Nice.
And so you can check that out if you are interested. It's so fast. It's an hour and 30 minutes and it flies by.
Ugh, I love it.
It's just thrilling.
The only other movie I watched was Bluebeard's Eighth Wife.
Oh my God. I saw that on a list and I was like, what happened
yeah.
to the first seven? I mean, I know what happened to the first seven, but
it's from 1938, and let me pull up the cast here. So it stars Claudette Colbert and Gary Cooper.
Yes.
And it's we open in the French Riviera, and a guy is in a department store trying to buy just a pajama top, and the shop owner is like, I can't sell you just the top. They come as sets. And this gorgeous woman is like, I'll buy the bottoms.
Oh my God.
So that is how Michael and Nicole meet, and they, as in the Lady Eve, where it takes like a single week for someone to be like, let me marry you,
I'm in love with you.
That's exactly what happens. Like, she, again, super smart and forward, and you know, he gets intrigued right away because she's like, oh, he's like, oh, those pants are for your husband, and she's like, I don't have a husband.
Ooh.
Like, they're for her dad.
Yeah.
We find out later. So he asks to marry her. She's like, yes, you're so sexy. And then she gets really upset because she finds out. So he's very, very wealthy,
mm-hmm.
as it goes in these. She finds out that he's been married seven other times. And so it's,
oh no.
Yeah. It's like the day before the wedding, or it's like very close to the wedding or something. It's like they're about to take like a big family portrait or something. Mm-hmm. And then she finds out and she's like, well, I don't want to marry you now. You've been married 7 times. It's clear in both The Lady Eve and this movie that nobody likes a slut in these.
Yeah. Yeah.
On either end.
Yeah, totally.
It's very alarming to people when someone's been married before. Yeah. They're like, ooh, I don't know about that. And he's like, well, all of my other wives have signed a prenup for $50,000 a year for the rest of their lives. And she still is like, well, I don't want to get married, but then convinces him. I think her dad is like, what are you doing? Yeah. Like, you should do it. And she convinces him to double it.
Oh, nice.
And then goes through with it. So then we get a time jump into they're married. They are clearly miserable.
Oh, no.
But both really stubborn. So he doesn't want to divorce her because he doesn't want to give her $100,000 a year for the rest
of
her life.
That's a lot of money.
And she doesn't want to divorce him because she kind of wants to maintain his interest,
right,
by like keeping this tension alive. And, you know, they are both really bitter toward each other, but she won't take any of his crap. Like, she slaps him, he slaps her, he spanks her, she bites him. it's very fun. And again, like, it's been a while since I watched it because it's, yeah, wait, this is our lost episode, but they start basically trying to dupe each other. Mm-hmm. Like, she is sending, he has a PI following her to see if she's like having affairs or something, and she pretends to have an affair, like starts sending anonymous letters saying that she's having an affair, and then she tries to arrange it so that he comes home and finds her with like someone who isn't actually her lover, but like she wants it to look like it, and he thinks something like that is going to go down, so he's like, all right, I'm leaving. And so they just try to keep duping each other, and eventually he has enough and he's like, all right, you can have your divorce.
Fine. Oh, fine.
Okay, you can have your divorce. And then the end of the movie is he's had a mental breakdown.
Oh,
he is in an asylum. He's in a straitjacket because he's recently seen her father come to the asylum because she's arranging for a visit. She's not allowed to see him because she's the presumed reason for the breakdown.
Right, totally.
But she does manage to make her way in there, and she's like, listen, now that I have money, I, like, you know that I really just want to be with you because I love you.
It has nothing to do with the money.
I do want to be with you. And then he goes into a rage and breaks out of his straitjacket and comes at her. But then they just have a good hug and a kiss. And then the movie's over.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was fun. It wasn't nearly as fun as The Lady Eve.
Right.
But same, like, very fast-paced.
Yeah, totally.
And fun humor, especially between... She's amazing. Like,
yeah.
And there's some really fun scenes in the meat of the movie where they're unhappily married. Some great back and forths.
Dang.
But yeah.
Wow. It's a great title
Bluebeard's
for a movie.
Eighth Wife. I know, exactly. That is streaming also on Criterion Collection.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I have one more movie to tell you about. I don't have that much to say, which is great because we're almost at the end
here.
Almost
at the end.
The other movie that I watched is like Edge Case because it's a little bit early. It's from 1933, so it's actually pre-code, which was crazy. Oh. I haven't seen that many pre-code movies, and like they were really doing it wild back then.
I still have a lot to learn about what pre-code and post-code means.
It's basically like
Haze code.
Yeah, the Haze code. I can only give you like the barest understanding of it because I too know very little. But it's the basically in, I want to say it was 1934. Mm. Or maybe 35, some in the mid 30s, there was this code written by a guy named Hayes. It's I think it's actually called like the Hollywood like something code. I don't know, whatever. Mm. That is essentially like all movies after that point had to fall under this like morality
yeah.
stricture, mm-hmm. where
it's certain, like pre-ratings, like,
yes,
kind of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know. But it was also just like a backlash towards Hollywood being like very like liberal is not the word that I want to use, but like what some might consider amoral or immoral, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. very much like after this point, it's kind of a period between like the mid 30s and like the 50s, because it kind of started to waver in like the 50s and 60s, mm-hmm. Where basically movies like couldn't depict certain things, like specifically a lot of things to do with sexuality, mm-hmm. and like race, mm-hmm. And like gender too, but like primarily like you could not you could not show like women like having sex,
yeah.
and you could not show like interracial relationships, like,
yeah.
but very specific, like this like kind of Christian morality,
yeah.
that was like imposed over all of Hollywood.
Yeah,
it's like a really terrible definition.
No, but, that's basically my understanding,
yeah.
but thank you for clearing that up for me and our listeners.
But yeah, so there are movies like Hollywood obviously existed before 1930, whatever. I almost want to say it was like 36. And so when you watch movies that are pre-code, not all of them, but a lot of them have, and this is also just in America, to be clear. This is like a Hollywood thing, not an international thing. A lot of them have just like, they're just a lot wilder than
yeah,
you would expect from a movie from the 30s, because we all have that kind of, not we all, but like I do.
We have, yeah, that idea,
that
like
things were more buttoned up.
Yeah,
totally. Much more strict, much less like loosey-goosey. But so it's always, I always find it really exciting when I watch a really old movie that feels really radical.
Yeah.
And so I watched this movie that is, I would say a screwball comedy, but like it's kind of on the edge because it's a little bit pre-rom-com.
Yeah.
But it's from 1933 called Design for Living. And
I've heard of that.
I really liked it. It was really fun. It is basically about these three people who meet on a train. It's two men who are best friends, and they're both like poor starving artists. One's a painter and one's a playwright, and on a train they meet this like beautiful woman named Gelda, who is a commercial artist. She's very successful, and she's basically a sellout, like it takes place in like the 30s, I think, well maybe even earlier, and they all live in Paris. And the two men, who are played by Frederick March and Gary Cooper, live in this like terrible apartment that's just like so gross. Like they're absolutely starving artists, but they're like wooing this woman that they met on the train, who is this commercial artist, and she comes to their apartment, and they like start spending a lot of time together, and they all fall in love. And so she basically dates both of them. and it's very fun because they very explicitly talk about sleeping with each other. Like she says the word sex in it, which is so crazy to hear in a movie from the 30s. But the screwballiness of it is that basically the two men find out that they're both sleeping with her and they're like, hey, what the heck? I thought you were my best friend. But then she, like when they go to confront her, she's like, well, but I'm in love with both of you. Why should I choose?
Ooh,
how could I choose between two different great hats?
This is delicious.
It's so delicious. And so they make a gentleman's agreement where all three of them shake hands and she's like, look, I'm in love with both of you. Don't make me choose. But also, I can make your careers a lot better because you're both really dumb. And so decides to be both of their agents. But she's like, but none of us will sleep together at all, right? We're not going to do it. And they all shake hands. But of course, they do, because they can't help it because they're in love with each other.
Yeah.
And so the rest of the movie is about them both, like, secretly on the side, like, sleeping together again. And then them finding out and like having a big falling out again, and then she like tries to marry the super straight-laced dude who's also like, I think he might also be an insurance guy, like another boring absolute
people
drip.
Have thought that's a boring job forever,
who's like super super wealthy, and then like it's obviously not working because she's still in love with her two boyfriends, but her new husband, like the like culminating event that's like the most screwball-y part of it, he like throws a big party for all of his clients, and they all come over, and it's like very fancy. Everybody's in tuxedos, and Gilda's two boyfriends gay crash the party and like mess it all up. But like, there's like a lot of like sneaking into rooms and like hiding from each other, and it's like it's so
fun.
It's so fun, and it ends in the same way where like they're like a gentleman's agreement, we're back at it again, but
yes!
like she divorces her husband and she decides to just like be with both of them, and it rules.
Wow.
I love Design for Living slaps. It's so fun.
Wow, the title too.
Yeah,
like with the plot.
Yeah, totally. It's great. Yeah.
Oh wow.
That's a very like basic summary. Like it's a little. Like all of these movies. It's a little more complicated, but it's less screwball-y, I think, because it's almost just like a straightforward rom com that has like some screwball elements.
Yeah.
Because it's like a little bit earlier, but it still has that like. It's definitely meant to be like kind of funny. That it's like she's dating both of them. Can you imagine?
Can you imagine? It's
but
crazy.
She like. But in the same way as these other ones, like, she has the agency the entire time. Like, she's absolutely like, we're doing what I want. And they're like, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Which, again, like, what a perfect tie-in to what we were saying earlier when we started talking about these movies is the way that progression can really slingshot backwards.
Yeah, totally.
Like, yeah, that is amazing. And it's definitely not a character quality we associate with stories from that time.
No.
And now we get a lot of, let's say, mainstream comedy, romantic comedies that have much more of the kind of relationship and gender roles that we expect from the 30s.
Right. Totally. Yeah. Like it's just a really funny flip back. Like when you watch a movie like that and you're like, oh my God, like, wow, this is so much more progressive than a modern love triangle, which is so much more boring and like has no, like the woman never has any agency.
No.
And it's just like, yeah. But yeah, Design for Living, just delightful. Also, all three of the main actors are amazing. Gilda is played by Miriam Hopkins and she's so good. And it's, I haven't really seen Gary Cooper in anything because I know he's mostly known for Westerns.
Yeah.
I just think about Putting on the Ritz when I hear him because that's just like the world that I'm living in, unfortunately.
Yep. Yeah.
But all three of them are amazing. And it's just like, everybody has gorgeous gowns, beautiful gowns. Just everybody's got great outfits. And there's like so many great bits where like when she's in their disgusting apartment, they like sweep all of their horrible trash under one chair, but then when she goes to like sit down somewhere, they like pick up the chair and bring it to her so that she can sit down, and then like the trash pile is just there in the middle of the room. It's like it's so fun.
Oh God, I really enjoyed our romp into screwball comedy.
Me too.
So fun.
It was delightful.
And
wow.
You know what a journey for me, who I entered it thinking it was going to be what is the name for the kind of comedy I'm thinking of, like absurdist,
yeah, like kind of spoofy
comedy?
Yeah, like Airplane is over.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, I'm so excited to watch Hot Shots.
You like sit like, I mean, screwball feels like the right word, but it's not.
It's not.
It's not.
It's not at all.
Something sillier.
I was like, oh, Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, it's time for me to watch Porky's.
No.